RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Leslie Manoukian is president and founder of Health Freedom Defence Fund, working to educate and advocate for foundational principles for a free society, defending them in the courts when necessary. We've talked to Leslie about that already a couple of times on this program. The fund is used to stand up for freedom, choice, and the most basic of human rights, bodily autonomy. And before the election, Leslie was asked to write a policy brief for health freedom. Now that RFK is in the White House on the back of Make America Healthy Again, we're wondering what changes we can expect to see from Leslie's perspective. Will her policy brief be incorporated into any new policy? Leslie, great to have you back. I hope you're well.
Hey, it's so fantastic to be with you. I love coming on your show.
Thank you. Last time we talked was before, you know what, now we're post that. And I guess first question, and we've asked this as of a few that we've interviewed, how much of a part, and I know it's a whole lot of things, but in Trump's victory was making America healthy again, do you think?
I think it was huge. I think it was a huge determinant. I think that there were a ton of people. So, you know, I mean, I've been in the health freedom arena for a long time. I've known Bobby for over 15 years. And there are so many of us who have been around him and known of him for a very long time. And he has done more, I think, single-handedly than any other person in this country to further the cause of health freedom and just basic awareness, right, about the dangers of Roundup, the dangers of aluminum and mercury being injected into our children and into ourselves. And I think a lot of those people sort of, you know, there were a lot of people who really believed that the country was very much on the wrong track. You know, it's become insane around the world, right? I mean, there's so many things that are a problem, and in particular in this country. And so I think that there were a lot of those people who were really frustrated, and so they wanted to vote for Trump as a result of that frustration. But there were a lot of people who thought, you know, he's not our guy, because they might have been Democrats lifelong. Bobby flipped them. Bobby flipped them. He was able to say, listen, I'm going to be in this administration. I'm going to be given a big position. And, you know, from what I understand, Melania Trump is very well aware of these issues. And I don't know if people remember, but in the very first campaign that Trump ran, when he was on a debate stage with like 15 other candidates, he actually said, I have seen children regress into autism in front of my eyes. He says one day they're fine and the next day they're not. And he's like, I'm not saying they're all bad. I'm just saying too many too soon. He knows.
Okay, he knows. So he was there quite a way back then. It's not just Johnny come lately to the party. We need to bolt RFK on to get our win, so we'll do whatever. Not like that.
But I think that RFK, that this you know, teaming is a very strategic choice, because in many ways, RFK can take all the flack and divert some of it away from Trump in the future, you know? So it'll, listen, Bobby has to be confirmed. You know, everybody's working to get him confirmed, and he can do a lot of things on day one. So there are certain, I wrote this policy imperatives, which has outlines 11 or 12 different policy imperatives, you know, policy changes that could be adopted. Some of those require congressional approval. Some of those can be more rapid. Certain things that could be more rapid. Trump could issue an executive order banning the advertisement of pharmaceuticals on television in the United States.
We only do that here.
But the thing is, that seems like a little tiny thing, but it's not. And the thing is, I don't think it's such a big deal in New Zealand, because frankly, you're a tiny market with a few million people. So how much energy and focus does the pharmaceutical industry put on New Zealand? Not a lot.
No, but what will be interesting is, because, and there's been a lot of talk about this here, Trump's win gives more permission to people now to say things that they might not have said before. And again, we're in the area of that. So there is quite an awareness of the pharmaceutical advertising, as it is in the States here. So people can be more bold now, let's say, to call for it to end.
I just have to say, Paul, sorry to interrupt, but it is so fundamental. It's financial. The pharmaceutical industry owns the media in the United States. Full stop.
And here, probably a bit. Yeah.
I'm sure to some extent, but it's not as big of a deal because this is one of the, this is the biggest market. The United States has the worst health outcomes of anywhere in the developed world, despite spending more per capita, per GDP, and in absolute terms on healthcare than any other country on the planet. We have the highest infant mortality of the developed world, and we're almost dead last, I think, or maybe are dead last for longevity. So clearly all this money is not helping anything, and Americans are ailing. And one of the reasons they're ailing is because the pharmaceutical industry owns the media. So the media has a vested interest in not telling you the truth. So doing that one thing and one thing only will completely change the game because they will be looking for new advertisers that are not the drug industry. And so I think, you know, things like this can be done, which would just irreparably, in a positive way, change the course that we're on. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff that he could do right away. He could change how people are appointed to the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and how, if conflicts of interest are allowed. Because right now, if you're on that committee, so this is people like Dr. Paul Offit and other vaccine developers and patent holders. They sit on that committee that makes decisions, recommendations about what vaccines go onto CDC schedule. And then the individual states adopt that schedule if they choose. Okay. These people have conflicts of interest. They just get waivers for them. Well, what if you banned waivers?
Yeah.
These are the kind of things that Bobby could do on the first day. Yeah.
Just back to the advertising thing, just quickly, because a thought came to mind as you were talking there. I noticed that Comcast, owner of MSNBC, is going to spin off, that's the word they use, MSNBC. There's ratings crashes, if you believe what you're saying, of up to 50% just in the last 2 weeks. So clearly a viability issue for those media businesses. But also, if it means that pharmaceutical industry advertising suddenly becomes very uncool, that's a business risk to those networks. And I wonder if there's something in their decision-making around that as well.
I just think that the problem is that you're never going to get the truth in this country unless you get rid of direct-to-consumer advertising. Because
there's no point in advertising on a network that no one is going to watch and is going to disappear.
Well, except the only thing is, I will say, is that, you know, human beings, unfortunately, have a very short memory. And so what ends up happening, if you look at what happened when Trump won in 2016, CNN tanked. And then it, you know, rose from the ashes. So yeah. I wouldn't be so quick to write off MSNBC or CNN or any of the network news, which is ABC, NBC, and CBS in this country. I think that they will see some kind of a resurgence. And the other thing is, I think it's really important. I mean, this has been too easy so far, in my view, from a, if you look at the last two election cycles and how much chaos there was, how much division and, it just seems like there's got to be another shoe to drop here. There's something that's going on. And I think that maybe, you know, the neocons are agitating for World War III. That's what they're pushing. I mean, the fact that the Biden administration just approved Ukraine launching missiles deep into Russia, this is just insanity. And I saw some people are calling for his impeachment. Yeah, they should be. This is outrageous. I mean, I usually don't talk about this kind of thing as a the head of a nonprofit in this country, but you know, I have a 22-year-old son. I don't want him going and dying in some senseless war. This is ridiculous. And the thing is, we are supposedly not at war with Russia, and yet we're approving this. This is just outrageous. It's un-American. It's undemocratic, and it's wrong on every level. So, my guess is there are other. Maybe they weren't able to do it at the ballot box, and so they'll do something else. I don't know.
No, here.
Crazy times we live in, Paul.
Understatement. I kind of broke your stride because you were starting to sort of head to the items in the policy brief that you'd written. And I sort of interrupted with the media thing, but maybe flesh out a few more of those things, because it seems to me that there are things that are kind of doable in the short term to fix the health issues to any, you know, measurable amount. It's going to take years, isn't it, really? You've got to change culture, behavior, all those things take time. What's doable, do you think? I mean, Trump said 2 years. I don't know how tight that is, but what's the doable stuff?
Oh, gosh. So much of it hinges on who can be approved. So the way that it works in this country is that the president puts forth candidates, and then the Senate, 2/3 of the Senate, actually, I think they've reduced it now to just a simple majority in the last administration or the last Congress. But basically, the Congress, the Senate has to approve. So it's one thing to nominate somebody. It's another thing to get them approved. But I think that there is such a mandate now with Trump having won the popular vote and both chambers of the Congress, so the House and the Senate, that it's going to be very hard for them to stop much. So what is really achievable is, you know, right away are things that can be decided from the director of an agency. So if people don't understand, the way that it works in the country is, you know, we've got the president, which is the executive, and then there's the legislative, which is the Congress, and then there's the judiciary. But all of those federal agencies sit underneath the executive. And so all of those are actually, they're authorized by Congress and they're supposed to be overseen by Congress, but they are actually executive branch functions. And so this is why the president gets to appoint the top people and people all throughout. And so from what I understand, there are efforts to appoint something like 4,000 people who are not career politicians or bureaucrats, people who are advocates for getting, you know, Whole Foods back into school lunches and getting seed oils out of the United States. So McDonald's used to fry their French fries in tallow, which is really healthy, natural fat, until around 1990. And then they changed to, I don't know if it's soybean oil or cottonseed oil or whatever. But so these kinds of things can be changed pretty quickly by just by policy, right? Forcing foods in this country to be labeled as GMO, for instance, would actually go a long way because Americans don't want to eat GMOs, but they're not labeled. And so that could be changed. You have, like I mentioned, the committees could be changed. And then there's the longer term stuff, which is stuff that I've recommended. So I was thinking about it from when I wrote that policy brief, a bigger picture. Like if you really want to change the culture, change everything, you need to repeal some of the most problematic policies that have been implemented over the last 40 years. So there's something called the Bayh-Dole Act. That is what allows NIH scientists who are funded off of taxpayer money to retain the patent rights to their whatever research they do and products they might develop. That's got to stop because that's literally pitting these people against the American public, right?
Yeah,
this is what happened with Moderna.
With the public's money.
They're doing it with the public's money. And this is what happened with Moderna and NIAID, Anthony Fauci's sub-agency at NIH. They literally own half the patent on the Moderna shot. So they have a vested interest in covering up any research that shows that this is dangerous. So that could be changed. You could repeal the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, which is the legislation that allowed the pharmaceutical industry to fast track their products in exchange for user fees. And those user fees started out at like $100 million a year. And the last time I checked, they were getting close to $3 billion. And they amount to literally, if you look at the portion of the salaries that they pay for the FDA drug approvers, it's 65% of their salary is paid by those user fees. Mm. So they know who butters their bread. So these kinds of things need to be repealed in order to seriously rectify. And then you've got things like the PrEP Act in 2005, which allows any corporation, any company, any producer or administrator of a medical countermeasure under a public health declaration to have a liability shield. So you have no liability if you make a mask or a test or a jab or a drug, if it's deemed emergency use under the PrEP Act, which was in 2005. So these are some of the things that longer term need to be changed. And if Congress is willing, could undo. There's, you know, this has to happen. This is the only way it's going to be rectified. So just doing the kind of first day things that Bobby could do as HHS secretary, those are all fantastic, but that's not going to right the ship. The righting of the ship is going to take congressional oversight and repeal of some of the most egregious policies that have been implemented in recent decades.
If autism has gone from 1 in 10,000 30 years ago to 1 in Well, they say 36, latest figure I've seen is 1 in 33 now. Something incredible has happened. Surely that would be part of the mix. Maybe you put it in what you've written, but Kennedy's certainly been talking about it, and that is the link between autism and vaccination. It's becoming quite clear. Do you think it's fair to say that it's really becoming quite clear, this link now?
It's indisputable at this point.
Indisputable, okay.
It's 1 in 22 boys in California.
Oh, well, okay.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Nearly 5% of all boys.
So it seems, yes,
there is no, in fact, have you ever heard of investigative reporter Cheryl Atkinson?
No. I talked to J.D. Hanley, and he gave us a good overview of that.
Okay, so Cheryl Atkinson, she used to work at CBS. She was a multi-award-winning investigative journalist when she was there. She has just produced a mini piece on autism and vaccines. Anybody, I dare anybody to read the research, the independent quality research, and tell me that vaccines don't cause autism. In fact, all of the scientists and doctors that I know and have known for many, many years, two decades now, they say it's not open to question whether or not vaccines cause autism or vaccines cause danger or injuries or death. It's just how much. That's it. Anybody who does an honest review of the literature can't avoid that conclusion. It's just not possible. There's too much evidence. And this is what originally got Bobby into it, was that he, he's told the story about how he was at home and this woman came and she knocked on his door and she had a stack of papers, like a foot or a foot and a half high, which is about half a meter, a third to a half of a meter. And she said, "I'm not leaving until you read all these." And it was all these papers. And this is 20 years ago. And she said, yeah, you're out there. And the reason that she went to him was because he was trying to clean up the Hudson River in New York. He had this, I think it was called River Keepers or Water Keepers Alliance, or maybe it was both. And they were getting all the toxins and pollutants out, one of which was mercury, out of the water because it was so toxic. You couldn't even fish anymore. The fishery, the fishermen were struggling and dying, and you shouldn't eat the fish because there were all these mercury advisories. And she said, you're talking about mercury, you need to look at this. So she gave him all of that stuff. But mercury is just one aspect. We know, Paul, that aluminum is extremely neurotoxic, and aluminum is escorted into the brain by the antigens that it's attached to and by the immune system. Okay, so like there are certain immune cells, macrophages, that chew up, basically eat, digest these antigens which are attached to the metals, and then they can be dispersed throughout the entire body, even into the brain. And there's an amazing researcher named Christopher Exley who has dissected the brains of people with autism, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and you know what he's found in all of them? Extremely high levels of aluminum.
Right.
So this stuff is what, and then on top of that, there's research from Kyoto University in Japan, which found that just injecting the antigens, absent any other adventitious ingredients such as mercury, aluminum, or polysorbate 80, which actually has an impact on fertility, but we'll just leave that aside for now. Injecting just the antigen is enough to overwhelm, repeatedly, it's just enough to overwhelm the immune system and cause dysregulation and autoimmune system. So Bobby is fully aware of all this stuff. This whole autism question, it's sort of sad that people focus only on autism, because the elephant in the room, the reason why Americans and our kids are suffering so much is because of the ridiculous vaccination schedule, where kids are getting, it's roughly 75 doses of 17 vaccines now. It's even bigger than that.
And that's what I was thinking when I raised it, is could we be seeing, or you be seeing, the end of the childhood vaccination schedule as a result?
I fully believe that people should be able to make their own decisions about what they want to inject into their own body.
But what if it does that to kids?
Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. I'm not advocating. If somebody wants to do that to their kids, that's their choice. It's not my place to tell them not to. Although they are, in my view, poison. And I believe that they should be taken off the market because they've never been properly studied for safety or effectiveness. Okay. They're usually studied against a mercury or aluminum containing solution or another vaccine. How is that scientific? Okay. And they study them for a few days sometimes, sometimes a longer period of time. It's crazy. So it's just unjustifiable. So I think that they should be taken off the market. But there are some people that, you know, they want to take a drug. They want to inject this. They like this kind of thing. I don't. It's not my way. I don't think it's my place to tell them. But what is imperative is that every single person have the honest, accurate information in order to actually exercise informed consent. Because if we don't have genuine information, we can't actually tell, we can't actually make an informed decision about something. And so that's where I think if somebody wants to review, if they were to actually subject every single vaccine to proper studies, placebo-controlled studies, and then be able to tell the public what the risk reward scenario is for each of those shots, and people still chose them, that's on them. And that's their prerogative. It's not mine. It's not my path. I would never do it. But the thing is, I think that if someone was to study this, then they wouldn't have vaccines. And so
the marketplace can do its job. People lose confidence and they're just not in anymore. And that kills it potentially.
And Paul, don't forget that the reason that the market can't do its job is because the vaccine makers are protected from any liability. And so
liability has to go. It has to go, right?
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
100%. And let me just say something. Mm-hmm. So I'll make an announcement. We sent out a press release yesterday about this, but we just filed a new lawsuit against the CDC and U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. And the reason I bring this up is because it's very, very important. We sued them over their denial of green cards. So any applicant who has not gotten a COVID shot cannot get legal immigration in the United States. Tens of millions of tourists can come without having the shot. And, you know, I mean, hundreds of millions of Americans at this point are not vaccinated because any immunity, if there is any from that shot, wanes very quickly after 2 months. And so it's ridiculous. So basically everybody in the U.S., aside from a handful of people who are like really drunk the Kool-Aid, are not vaccinated. And yet we're requiring people who live abroad and want to bring their spouse and their children home and their spouse is not an American citizen to get the shot. So we sued and said, we have all these people who've been denied citizenship, so they can't come home because they want the shot. But here's the thing. The reason it's so important. It is federal law that CDC can only put vaccines on the schedule for immigration if they protect against a vaccine-preventable disease. That's federal law. Is COVID a vaccine-preventable disease?
No.
Exactly. So if we can win on this, which I really believe we will, it's outrageous, outrageous that this is still happening for 3 years, 3.5 years since they already acknowledged that shots don't stop transmission or infection. We're going to be overturning this for not only COVID shots, but we'll be able to attack other shots that don't confer immunity. So this is where we're headed, right? So we're going to attack. We're like pincering in on them from all these different directions. We take away the liability shield. We sue them and expose that they're lying about the efficacy, the effectiveness of the shot. And then we can go for others. And remember, I've told you about our case against the Los Angeles Unified School District, where we argued that the COVID shots are not a true vaccine and therefore can't be mandated. This is another thing. Well, there are a lot of other shots that don't stop transmission or infection. And if that's the case, they all need to go. So do you see, we're coming in from all these different angles and making their life very uncomfortable. And I think that, yes, that there will be, I think that the future of the vaccine industry and the pharmaceutical industry is seriously in question right now, which is why, you know, the day after it was announced that Kennedy was the selection for HHS, all the stocks crater.
Yeah, I suppose that's that was quite predictable. Just in the short time we've got left, the deep medical state or health state, however we describe it, is going to push back. And they've got politicians that they've donated to that they're expecting a return from in situations like this, possibly. Do you think there's a danger of getting appointments wrong? I'm thinking of Dr. Oz, who Trump has picked for the oversee health insurance. Yeah, 150 million Americans there, and he pushed vaccines and lockdowns. From what I can see, seen a few clips. So, are you concerned about the wrong people getting into positions that could cause issues here?
100%. Listen, I think that Trump has been made into this, you know, martyr in many ways. He has been made into a kind of a modern day messiah in many ways. And I think that's dangerous. I think that's dangerous thinking. I think that it's incumbent upon every American and people around the world as well to continue exercising our right to stand up for ourselves and pushing back and holding them accountable. So yes, I think that there are, it's very, very easy. You know, he doesn't have the opportunity to say, well, I was just surrounded by this deep, deep state. I didn't know this time, right? Last time he appointed a lot of people that I think shouldn't have been anywhere near the, you know, levers of power. And there are already some people that people have questions about. You know, his chief of staff is Susie Wiles. People say she's a very nice lady. She ran a really tight ship, but she's a pharma lobbyist. Her firm is huge lobbyist for pharma. In fact, I think specifically either Merck or Pfizer, if I recall. And so, you know, this is kind of interesting, you know, so I think we just have to be ever vigilant and hold their feet to the fire on every single thing that they're doing, because that's the only way, that's the way our system is designed to work too. You know, that's the reason we're in such trouble, is because I think it's not only Americans, but people all over the Western world have just taken their eye off the ball for many, many decades, if not more than a century. And they've not been engaging the way that they should have been. They don't vote as much. I mean, I know in Australia, I don't know if New Zealand is like this, but you have to vote by law. But do you in New Zealand?
Yeah, not here. No, not by law. No.
And the thing is, even if there is a law, are people truly educated? You know, I mean, so.
No. Sorry, no.
So the law doesn't fix it. The point is that we as a society have to recognize that the only way these democratic systems work is if we are engaged. And we know that the power of the people works, because this is how, you know, the 5,000 parents in Los Angeles stopped the COVID vaccine mandate for their children in the Los Angeles Unified School District. This is what matters. And so, you know, we can't just hope that Bobby is going to save us, or any of the appointments at HHS or USDA or anywhere else, or that Trump is. I think it's really incumbent upon each and every one of us to stay engaged. And I think personally that that's the biggest risk we face, that people who came out in droves to elect him will now take their eye off the ball and say, you know what, everything's peachy, he's going to do all the right things. No. We have to stay on them and make sure that they know that we're watching and we are going to stand up if they don't follow through on their promises.
Certainly feels a bit better than it was, even from this distance, got to say, Leslie.
Oh, Paul. Oh, my gosh. I tell you, on Tuesday night, I went to sleep because I really honestly couldn't take it.
Yeah, right.
I was so anxious about what might happen if the unthinkable happens.
Yeah.
Because make no mistake, we have an administration and we had a candidate who was pushing all, you know, wokeness in every guise, lawlessness by literally decriminalizing theft across the country in many cities, an open border, censorship on a gross scale, which is, you know, anathema to what it means to be American. Like, it's in our First Amendment. And, you know, Hillary Clinton and John Kerry both called for either changes or suspension to some extent of the Constitution and the First Amendments in the weeks running up to the election. So had Kamala Harris won, we would have been I think very terrifying for the Western world, because the U.S. kind of leads in these things. So I woke up and I was unbelievably relieved, because I went to bed worried that the same thing was going to happen as what happened in 2020. And, you know, everything that I'm saying is from a health freedom standpoint, because there's only one side that is supporting health freedom. And that is, you know, Trump has always said, I never mandated anything. And it is true. He never did. He never mandated a mask or a test or a shot. All of that stuff was done under Biden. All of it. Or by individual states. So, you know, from a health freedom standpoint, we supported the candidates who are standing up for health freedom. And unfortunately, it wasn't Kamala Harris. So, I mean, I think had she won, Paul, oh my gosh, it would have been really terrifying. I think we would have seen, you know, an acceleration of the whole biometric surveillance state, installation of that whole, you know, biotechnical grid. And I hope that we can stop it now. So, yeah, it was unthinkable.
Great catching up. Leslie, thanks for coming back on the program. Leslie Manoukian, president and founder of Health Freedom Defense Fund. Fascinating, interesting times. We live in interesting times, even more interesting now.
We sure do, Paul. Thanks so much for having me again. Great to be with you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.